Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the confessional here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, you may remember that a couple of weeks ago we talked about confessing our own acts of mechanical stupidity over the years. I mean, these were nice things. I mean, the time my brother dropped a car off the lift, the time I lost my eyebrows to a rather volatile organic compound. Of course, the show's only an hour long, so we had to send people to the website to continue the discussion. And it turns out there were quite a few people who were eager to confess their own mechanical mishaps.
Really? I'm guessing you have a few to read to us?
I'm going to read just one.
Oh, just one.
I thought this one was good. Do we give out people's names here? What do you think?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you Harry's name.
No. What's his last name?
Rose.
Just give his last name.
Okay.
Just give Harry's last name.
All right, here it is. Several years back, I was standing in my driveway admiring my brand-new 20-year-old Porsche 912. I had changed the oil, changed the plugs and the wires, cleaned the metal mesh air cleaners, and tightened everything in sight.
Mm.
As I looked into the engine compartment, which is in the back of the car, yes, we knew that, I noticed two discs the size of jar lids, one on each side of the engine, with rubber donuts sandwiched in between them and a bolt running through the middle. The rubber donuts looked a bit worn and cracked. Out came the ratchet. These were big bolts. I started on the right side. Out came the bolt. The left bolt came out, but not as easily as the right, until the very end when it resisted. No problem. I stepped closer to the job, firmly planting my feet under the car for leverage, and I continued to turn. When the bolt finally gave way, it stopped doing what it was supposed to do.
You're holding the engine.
Which is, it holds the engine in the car. The back of the engine fell to the driveway and onto my firmly planted feet.
I love it.
Screaming was out of the question because of my reputation. Once free, I hobbled to the garage, retrieved my jack, and performed a two-man job alone. Harry, that's a good
one.
It's
amazing what strength you can have when you do something really stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, that's one way to learn.
Oh, and we've certainly done that many times, but I guess all the other ones are posted on our website.
Oh, we got 1,000 of them.
Right. But Harry's was the best.
I thought Harry's was the best to read today.
Well, look, if you've got a question or a confession about your car, the number here is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heather calling from El Paso, Texas.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso.
That's got to be the town anthem, right?
Oh, yeah.
That song?
Oh. Do people go around humming that in the streets at
of
will?
Of course. Every day.
So what's going on, Heather?
What kind of a Suburban do you have, GMC or Chevy?
Oh, close. Honda Civic.
Yeah, very close. Yeah, so what's up?
It's a 93, and it's a two-door. And about 2 months ago, I started noticing the strangest sound. It sounds like there's an opera singer under my car.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What vocal range? Is it a baritone or is it?
Is it la donna mobile?
No, definitely a soprano.
Oh,
I'd
a soprano.
Say. Yeah. It started out to be a real high pitched, almost a nice sort of sound, but now it's getting a real kind of rough and squealy sound to
Under
it.
What circumstances does the sound occur?
Well, it happens usually after the car has been sitting, and maybe, you know, I start it and start to drive, and as I start to drive, the sound starts, and as
but
I pick
not
up
as
the speed,
you, not when it first starts.
No, not until actually maybe the wheels start turning.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, good, good.
Anyway, and as I pick up speed, the sound kind of, you know, picks up, seems to go faster and faster, and usually when I get between 30 and 40 miles an hour, the sound pretty much stops.
Yeah.
Is it like a very high screech?
It isn't.
But it's punctuated, though. Is it continuous like that?
Yeah. No, no, no.
What? There would be monkeys. You have monkeys in El Paso?
It's continuous.
Yeah.
Aren't you sorry you asked that question?
I didn't ask.
You did. You said, is it continuous like that?
Yeah.
And does it answer this question?
Okay.
Maybe.
And give us the right answer or we won't be able to give you one.
If you step on the brake while this is happening.
Ooh, nice question, baby.
Does it change? I mean, I know it changes because you slowed down, but can it actually even go away when you step on the brake?
No.
She's going to say no. I knew it. I knew she was going to say no.
All right. I have a fallback position.
I have one, too.
Okay. Well, what do you think it is? You have any ideas?
I'm working on a wheel bearing at the moment.
You are?
Yeah, what are you working on?
Oh, I wasn't working on a wheel bearing. I'm working on a stuck caliper on the right front wheel.
You are?
Yeah. I was at Heather's house last night to check this out.
Even with her answer about the brake, touching the brake doesn't do nothing to it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I decided that I could. Yes or a no answer would have been. That was the best question.
Those are the best. That doesn't matter what she says.
No, I think what happens is you have a caliper that sticks, and then as you drive along, you make the noise, or it makes the noise because the brake is touching the disc, and it shouldn't be, at least with that kind of intensity. And then after you've worn away a little bit of the brake material, the noise, in fact, will go away. Or if you go fast enough, you just don't hear it.
Yeah.
And then it probably is all right after a while because you've worn away enough of the brake so that it doesn't touch the disc.
Okay, now hold
anymore.
It now.
No, no.
Yeah.
We have to go there. We have to. We have to ask.
Okay.
If that happens, and then you come to a stop, does the noise come back?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Sometimes
but
it
sometimes.
Will,
just
but
sometimes will
always.
Be good enough.
Yes.
Okay, you pass.
Sometimes.
Oh. No, sometimes it's good enough.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be on Stump the Chumps, Heather, but but I think you should take it into your shop, your mechanic, and have them check to see if you have a stuck caliper.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Matthew from Boise, Idaho.
Hi, Matthew from Boise.
Yeah, so my problem is, I have a 1993 Geo Tracker, and it's a big piece of crap, pretty much.
it's a little piece. Yeah, it's
very little. Yeah. A Donka toy, almost.
And it was expensive. Did you buy it new?
No, I bought it used, unfortunately.
I remember some years ago thinking that I wanted a vehicle like that. I mean, everyone goes through that stage in his or her life.
Yeah, because it is a nice kind of vehicle.
Well, and it's an adventuresome kind of vehicle.
It is.
It makes you feel like you're on vacation or some kind of an adventure.
And
or
you can
safari.
Take the top off.
You can take the top off or it can blow off all by itself. And I went to the local Chevrolet dealer in our town.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember laughing out loud
when I saw
the sticker price.
Yeah.
I don't remember how much it was, but it was as much as like a real car.
And you said, you've got
to
be
kidding. And I asked the salesman to explain it, and he shook his head. He said,
we don't know.
I can't explain it. He said, why don't you go look at something else? Anyway, go ahead.
All right.
Pick out two or three things that are wrong with it.
There's this. It's a high-pitched sound coming.
Another one.
Another sound coming from, it sounds like, the driver's side in the front from that wheel or something. But it's usually when I'm, obviously, when I'm driving. And about when I hit about, I don't know, maybe 35, it kind of subsides. But it's not as high-pitched as maybe
a
the Civic was.
Yeah.
But it's pretty high-pitched.
And
it's kind of like a moan.
Well, you heard all the questions we asked her. What are your answers to all those questions? It doesn't happen until you start moving.
It actually happens when you turn it on, though, too.
Aha! So you don't have to be moving.
No.
Ah, good. That means it's a different answer. That's bad.
Yes, you don't
you
have to be.
You could have recycled an answer here.
And when you hit about 35, though, it does seem to kind of dissipate, but it comes back, though, too, once in a while. If you do press on the brakes, it doesn't change it. That doesn't change anything.
Have you ever tried revving the engine when the vehicle is stationary? Like you leave it neutral, for example, and you rev it up.
Uh-huh.
Does that change the noise?
No, I think the noise is still there.
The noise doesn't increase in frequency? Is it a continuous sound?
Actually, it does. No, it is not a continuous sound. Sometimes it'll go, it'll do that.
Really? And then once you stop moving, it stays there.
It's there until you hit about 35, and then 35 or 40, right around there, and then I can't hear it anymore.
And then it goes away.
And then you come down to a slow speed again. The noise comes back.
And it comes back, though. It does come back.
And is it there the whole time the car is running?
It seems to be, yeah. I've begun to ignore it, so I'm not sure anymore.
And it's been there how long?
Oh, boy. Probably about 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. I think you have a bad water pump.
A bad water pump.
How about a stuck brake caliper?
You could have that, too. No, we're gonna eliminate the brakes and bearings and the like because you've told us
obviously
that
not in the wheels, it's in the engine.
Oh.
It's something that's turning when the engine's running.
Okay, so that's not good.
And the wheels aren't.
And a loose belt, for example, would make more of a screeching sound. It would probably go away after the thing warmed up.
Yeah, it's not a screech.
And no. I think you have a bad water pump. You're hearing the bearing, and it'll make a moaning kind of a rattling kind of scraping sound.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you covered all the bases there.
Whistling.
No matter what sound he had.
Moaning, rasping, scraping.
How about thumping? You want to throw a thumping in there?
No, no thump. No thump. But I think you should get this looked at soon because if the water pump blows, you could ruin the engine.
Okay.
Even more than it's ruined already.
Hey, let's say if it was the water pump, are those expensive?
No.
A few a few hundred bucks, I think.
Holy moly.
That
car's not even worth a few $100.
Doesn't matter. That explains your reluctance to have it looked at.
Exactly.
Remember, some people have the theory that you shouldn't spend more on the car than the car is already worth. And I have pointed out many times that if that were the case, I would never be able to put gas in any of the cars I've ever owned.
See you, Matt.
Thanks.
Hi. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Amy from Ely, Minnesota.
Hi, Amy from Ely?
Yep.
E-A-L-Y?
I knew you would ask me to spell it. It's E-L-Y, so just a tiny little town right up near the Canadian border. It's about 15 miles from the Canadian border.
And what state was this in again?
In Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Oh, so you don't know my buddy, Les Block?
No.
You know Dave from Bemidji?
I know Bemidji, but I don't know Dave. No. Oh,
well, you should know. Everyone should know Dave.
Next time you go through Bemidji, look, ask for Dave, because he will give you a day's laughs.
All right, well, I'll look him up if I go to Bemidji. That's a promise.
Well, thanks for calling, Amy.
So what's going on anyway?
Well, I drive a 93 Audi 90. And I actually don't really have a question directly about the car, but I do have a question about cold weather protocols.
Yeah.
It's very cold here in Ely. It regularly gets down to 40 and 25 below. Not wind chill, not that sissy wind chill stuff, but real temperatures.
A real bona fide 25.
Absolutely.
Oh, minus 25 freeze your shorts off degrees.
Right. Jeez. And so I warm up my car every morning. But my habit is that I start the car and I pull it out of the garage and pull it up closer to my house so it's easier to load my very small children into the car.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if by moving the car before it's fully warmed up, if I'm losing any of the benefit of warming it up because I've moved it.
No. You're only moving it, what, few feet?
50 feet.
Yeah. What you don't want to do when it's that cold is rev it up.
Right.
Right. You don't want to accelerate exactly
things
hard.
Break. I mean, if you started driving right away.
Oh, yeah.
It's possible. If you just started it up at 25 below zero and got on the highway, you'd probably break everything.
Right.
We've done that.
And so do you think 15, 20 minutes is enough time?
Oh.
Any way you could leave the car running all night?
Well, a lot of people here do leave their cars running for, you know, the entire trip into the grocery store or, you know, for hours on end because the temperatures do get so low.
Sure. But do you have a block heater?
Yep, I do have a block heater. Block heaters are like milk in the fridge in Ely, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Everybody's got them.
So you are plugged in every night. So the truth is you don't really need to warm it up for 25 minutes.
No.
Interesting. That's probably right.
5 minutes is probably more than enough.
So really I'm only worrying about getting the interior of the car warm. Because the block heater is really covering the heating up the oil and everything.
Correct.
Yeah, and I should mention, you know, that most people who live in a reasonable part of the country don't need to warm their cars up to this extent, if at all.
Right.
You know, most people, even if it's, you know, unless it's below zero, you hardly need to warm your car more than a minute or two. You know,
it's only the people who start it up and immediately take off
right, with
a heavy foot who are doing something wrong.
But if it's 28 degrees where you live, you know, overnight temperature, then you can literally start it up and drive off.
Right.
You know.
Except the heater won't work.
Except the heat, but you don't need it because it's 28. But when it's minus 28, so you have heated seats.
I do have heated seats.
Do they still work?
Yes, they do.
Oh, you're all set.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have long underwear, heated seat. You're all set, Amy.
Yeah, no problem.
You're good
to go. Great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call.
Yeah, take care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Good
okay,
luck.
Look, I have a question for you. Let's start with an easy
here
one.
Here we go. Yeah.
Do you remember that we had a puzzle last week?
Yes, I do.
Good. Now here's a slightly tougher one. If this is your elbow. What's this other thing I'm pointing to?
Come on. Just give me a hint, will you? I'm going to remember the puzzler.
All right. Here's a fill in the blank.
And I know the other thing.
When the new boss came in and fired you from your last job, he said it was because he wanted to start with a clean blank.
I remember this exactly. He said he wanted to start with a clean conscience.
No, a clean slate. Oh. The puzzler was about a piece of slate being used as a fireplace hearth. And we'll be back with the answer and more of your calls in just a minute.
Stick shifts and safety belts. Bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving. In the car, it makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me. But when we're driving in my Malibu, it's easy to get right next to you. I say, baby, scoot over, please. And then she's right there next to me. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
And even though all the creamers in the NPR fridge simultaneously curdle whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this puzzler was from the wonderful world of, I think I said, home economics.
You did.
And it was sent in by someone named Jerry Galloway, though I've added significantly to the obfuscation and the unclarification, et cetera,
and
et cetera.
And I remember this puzzler, and I know the answer.
Well, I know you do. Here it is. My friend had purchased a piece of slate to use as a hearth in the floor in front of his fireplace. The slate was, you know, 3/4 inch thick and 10 inches wide and 48 inches long. And by the way, it weighed 175 pounds, half a mother-in-law. Now, he had cut a hole in the oak floor that was the exact same size as the piece of slate in every dimension. Of course, there was still the subfloor underneath. He'd remove just the oak flooring, you know.
You
with me?
Sure.
Anyway, when he put one end of the slate into the hole that he'd cut in the floor, he realized that he had no way of lowering the other end of the slate gently into its hole. There was no room for his fingers. In fact, he had done such a good job of measuring and cutting that there was only a hundredth of an inch clearance all around this thing.
Yeah.
Not even enough to use something like fishing line to lower the end of the slate. And he knew that if he dropped the brittle slate even half an inch, it would break.
Oh.
So he sat there for the longest time drinking beer and pondering this dilemma. And after his fifth or sixth trip to the kitchen, he returned with something.
To the kitchen or the bathroom?
Kitchen, then the bathroom. He returned with something from the kitchen that solved the problem in an elegant fashion. And what did he find there that worked so well and allowed him to lower the slate into the hole without the risk of breaking it? Now, there are lots of things. Maybe you could have come back with spatulas, frying, you know, what do they call those things?
Spatulas.
Flip the thing, you flip eggs over. Spatula.
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 Spatula clock.
or frying, any number of things that are in
none of which would work because they're not a hundredth of an inch thick.
Exactly.
They're more than a hundredth of an inch thick, and they won't work.
Right. Even
if you had it, what would you do with it?
Exactly. So what did he return with?
I know.
Yeah. Mm. The ice cube tray from the freezer.
Yeah.
And placing a few strategic ice cubes on the subfloor.
How many would you have used?
I would have used about 8.
I was only going to use 4.
I would have used all that were in the tray. So the ice cubes were placed on the subfloor. The slate was placed above it. So now that it was, now the slate actually sat proud of the floor. It was above the floor. And as the ice cubes melted, the slate lowered itself into the
hole. Perfectly, right straight down.
Yeah, and of course the contractors had to come in and rip out the rotted subfloor because of the water. But that's another story
for another day.
I mean, you can't have everything. So who's our winner? Of course, it wouldn't hurt the subfloor at all. That plywood is waterproof.
Hey, interestingly, the winner is Gloria Carpenter.
Oh, what are the chances of
that? What are the chances of that? From Colorado Springs, Colorado, and for having her answer selected at random from among all, both, the correct answers that we got, Gloria will receive a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, where she can get any of the thousands of hastily returned Car Talk CDs that are now piling up at the shipping department.
We're having a 2 for $1, 3 for $1.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show today. It is brand new, so stick around for that. Right now, if you have a question about your car or anything, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Eleanor calling from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hi, Eleanor.
Eleanor.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm heading off on a 6.5-month bike trip around the world, and I'd like to know what to do for my truck while I'm away.
Boy, the oceans
are going to put pontoons on the bike?
The oceans are going to present a problem. 6.5-month bike trip, huh?
Yeah.
So what do you do for a living that allows you to take 6.5 months off?
She's a college professor.
I just finished graduate school, and I figured this is my last chance to go off on a trip before I have to work for the rest of my
lifetime. You know, everyone I know who has done something like this repeats it about every 3 years. Once it's in your blood, yeah. Eleanor, you will be taking months off forever and ever.
Good for you.
I envy you. So the question is, what to do with your truck?
Yeah, I've got a 1989 B2200 Mazda pickup. And I'm just wondering, should I do certain things for it to be sure it'll be in good driving condition when I get back, or what should I do to take care of it?
Do you have a trusted and loyal friend to whom you could lend this truck that would drive it a little bit but not drive it into the ground? I mean,
Wouldn't you decide to go on a round-the-world trip with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's an 89, so you know it's on its last legs anyway.
It's in good shape. My partner is going to look after the house here while I'm away, and I was going to let the insurance run out for 6 months so I don't have to pay for that while I'm gone.
Why doesn't he just pay the insurance and he drives it? He has a car.
Oh, he has a Subaru, a nice little station wagon.
Well, but I think it would be worthwhile to insure this thing. What's it going to cost? A few hundred bucks?
$500 or so, yeah.
Well, here's my concern. You live in an area where there's high relative humidity.
Yeah.
And, boy, that wreaks havoc on parked vehicles.
Yeah.
For $500, you can insure it, and he can drive his car once and yours the next.
Yeah, I mean, you're taking 6.5 months off. You're obviously not – money's not a big deal for you.
Oh, I'm going to spend all my money on this trip, though.
So what's another $500?
I won't have anything left for insurance.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. Spend the $500.
Well, if you don't spend the $500 that way, you'll be spending it to fix stuff when you come back. So you might as well spend it right up front and prevent all of the horrible things that are going to happen to it.
So he'll, you know, he'll use the handbrake. I mean, he'll do all the kinds of things that he does to his car
right. That
have kept that from turning into a pile of junk. But I fear that if you park it, and I also feel that your trip is apt to be more than 6.5 months.
You don't think I'm coming back?
I don't think you're coming back too soon.
If the pontoons don't work, you ain't coming back at all.
But well, I would.
I didn't tell you who I was heading off on this trip with, actually.
No, by all means.
I've managed to round up 4 American men to commit to the trip as well, so I won't be alone.
Really?
Yeah.
4 men and 1 gal.
Who I've never met before, except via email and telephone.
I'm sure they're all looking forward to meeting you.
How are you getting across the oceans?
Well, I'm going by airplane. traditional mode.
Traditional
so
mode.
So you are going to bicycle every place it's possible to bicycle.
Yeah, flying to Auckland, New Zealand first, and then from there over to Vietnam, and then we'll be on land for a while.
And really? Wait a minute. From Vietnam, you're going to go all the way across Asia, Eastern Europe, and end up like in Spain?
We'll eventually end up in Ireland, actually, and fly home from Ireland.
But all of that stuff between Vietnam and Ireland, except for that last leap there, is bicycling.
Well, there'll be one plane flight at least from Bangkok to Istanbul, but in between we'll be cycling.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a long way, Bangkok to Istanbul, if you don't mind my saying.
Well,
I mean, that's a little...
Yeah, this hardly qualifies.
Wait a minute. Hardly around the world.
Yeah, it sounds like you're hitting all the tourist spots. I mean, how much time are you spending in Nice?
Yeah, wait a minute. Bangkok to Istanbul is about 4,000 miles.
More.
Well, we can't take a whole year, so we have to pack a lot in.
Oh, it's like 10,000 miles.
Yeah, it's like more than half the distance.
Half the distance.
Well, we're still doing about 12,000 kilometers, so I figure that's
pretty significant. Oh, sure, now throw it into kilometers.
Yeah, you're down to 8,000 miles.
Seven.
Right? You can do that in a long weekend.
No, I'm not that fast. The guys might be, but I'm not that fast.
That's
well,
good.
you'll get fast running away from those four guys. But have your partner, if you can stand to pay the insurance, and
right.
I would strongly recommend it.
Okay.
Have him drive it, because I think in the long run, it'll be much cheaper for you.
Okay.
Good luck, Eleanor.
Thanks a
and
lot.
And send us, keep us posted.
Okay, I'll send you a postcard.
Okay, from Istanbul, Thailand. When the plane lands.
Okay, from Istanbul.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Dan from Lakewood, Colorado.
Hey, Dan.
And I'm calling to ask, why does my mileage go down so significantly
in the winter?
When the temperature goes down. That's correct. I have a 1999 Ford Explorer all-wheel drive V8 automatic, 50K miles.
And how much does your gas mileage change?
Between 20 and 25% reduction.
So it goes from 10 down to 7.5?
Right. it's a Colorado Cadillac, but what can I say?
Give or take a few, yeah.
Right.
Jeez.
What kind of driving do you do?
In town, and it's the city of Denver is essentially flat.
So you take mostly short trips?
Yes.
With like a half an hour to an hour between them?
Yes.
Oh, that couldn't be better.
But the driving you do in the winter is not different from the driving you do in the summer. Is that true?
That is correct.
Well, everyone's mileage is reduced in the cold weather.
Okay.
Some cars are worse than others, but a 25% drop in mileage is significant.
It is, but it's because of the kind of driving that he does.
But
you remember our buddy who used to work at MIT and Harvard, and he had an Oldsmobile, and he used to get about 10 miles to the gallon. It was a lousy big old heap. But in the winter, his 10 miles to the gallon went down to 2 miles to the gallon.
Right.
He was getting 10 miles to the tank. Because he would take these short trips back and forth from Harvard to MIT, which is about 2 miles, stay there for an hour, hour and a half, during which time the engine gets cold. Then he would get back in the vehicle and drive back the other way. The engine never had a chance to warm up, as it sounds like your driving pattern. And so the engine is always running cold, which is sucking up a lot of fuel.
But I think you have a different problem, and we've seen this on a lot of Ford Explorers, that the thermostats are faulty.
Uh-huh.
And the thermostat opens up too soon. And in the summertime, it really doesn't make any difference. Even if you had no thermostat in there, it wouldn't affect your mileage very much. But in the winter, the engine is always running too cool. And you may not get any indication of it. You may still have adequate heat.
Yes.
The temperature gauge on the dashboard may still read in the normal range. Although you may notice it reads below the middle.
Yes.
And if that's the case, I would take it in and have them replace the thermostat.
Ah, okay.
And I think you'll notice when you do that the gauge will read closer to normal.
Right, and you'll get a 5% increase in fuel.
Right, it'll cost you $150 for the thermostat. Take you 7.5 years to get payback, but that's, you know.
So what? At least you'll know that's what it was.
Right.
But I think I would recommend that. I think that's going to solve your problem.
Where is the needle most of the time when you're driving? Does it even get off the pin?
Yes, but it is to the left of center.
You know, and on that gauge, it spells the word normal.
Yes.
Is it on the N?
O.
It's on the O.
It's on the O. That's no good.
That's what I've been telling them.
You need a thermostat.
See you, Dan.
Good luck, Dan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is tough. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jenny calling from Helena, Montana.
Helena, that's the capital, you know.
It is.
I think she might know that, yeah.
I just wanted to let know that I passed that geography course. What's up, Jenny?
Well, I have kind of a strange problem. I got married a few months ago, and my husband lost some weight since the wedding, and his wedding ring became too big. So when he was driving our Jeep, the ring slipped off and fell into a crevice in front of the instrument panel, and we can't get it out.
What year Jeep is this again?
It's a Jeep Liberty 2002.
Did it fall into the defrost vent thing there?
No, there's actually a pretty wide crevice in front of the instrument panel in the Jeep.
Well, I can't say that I'm... The only Jeep Liberty I've been in is the one we test drove when they first came out, and I don't really remember. But, so how much weight did he lose?
Like 15 pounds or so. He went from thin to thinner.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, must be marital bliss that's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you busting him or what?
he may just disappear someday. You'll wake up and he'll be gone. Jeez, I didn't know he was that happy. The question is how to get the ring back.
Yeah, and the other thing we were thinking of is just going and buying a new ring because it's just a plain band, no diamonds.
Well, you know, I'm on my third wedding ring. First wife, but third ring. And I've had to replace two of them. My first ring cost $11. My gold ring. It's a standard gold wedding band.
Yeah.
Subsequent replacements have cost several hundred dollars for the exact same ring.
Well, you put on some weight. I've had three wedding rings too, but I've had.
Can you recycle wedding? I mean,
it's not right. I think you have to get the ring out of there.
We do.
I think so.
Well, I think so. I mean, you don't think it's important enough? You'd just as soon go over to the store, the five and dime, and buy another one.
Well, we just want to do whatever will be least expensive.
The thing is still on warranty.
What, the ring?
Yeah.
The car.
Oh, the car.
You should take it in and tell them you have a strange noise coming from the dashboard. It sounds like something jingling in there. No, you should just take it in and have them remove the instrument cluster. And I think when they do that, they'll find the ring.
You think they will?
Yeah, but you have to tell them the ring is there, otherwise they're just going to keep it.
Yeah.
Tell them that they're looking for a wedding ring.
Yeah. Ring? What ring?
Okay.
Yeah, but that shouldn't cost too much money.
Between you and us, what'd you pay for the ring?
I think it was about $200.
Yeah. That's what I paid for my last ring.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you don't feel that there is any particular significance to the particular ring that you put on his finger and when you said I do and he said I do, then what the heck, just go buy another one.
You think it'll cost that much for him to take the dashboard off?
Well, don't forget, between taking the dashboard off and resizing the ring.
That's true.
Yeah, might be a wash.
Yeah,
and think about this. If you bought another ring and you subsequently discovered the old ring, you'd have a backup ring.
Sure. And you could hope that something in the dashboard breaks someday.
And they find
And
the
there's
ring.
Another reason to take the front of the dashboard off. And you say, and by the way, when you do that, give me the ring that's going
to
fall.
And you can always use the ring for husband number two. See you, Jenny.
Thank you.
Good luck. And start feeding this guy, will you?
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, look, I think it's time for us to pause here for a minute.
This is where we give our stations a chance to commune with their listeners. Is that right?
No, this is where we give the listeners a chance to seal and stamp their hate mail so it can be on its way to us before our mics are even cooled off. It's a public service that we provide.
That's
you know.
Nice. That's nice. We'll be back with a brand new puzzler and more of your calls in just a minute. So stay tuned.
I woke up this morning about a quarter to six, I found myself in a terrible fix. My baby was gone and my Cadillac too. Now, won't you tell me what I'm gonna do? Well, I'm looking high and I'm looking low. Where in the world did that woman go? I gotta find my baby and bring her back home. She ran off with my Cadillac. She said she loved me, said she always would. But she left me for a cat named Robin Hood. He had a dark green suit with a feather in his hat. He wasn't nothing but a real cool cat. Oh, well, I'm looking high and I'm looking low. Where in the world did that woman go? I gotta find my baby and bring her back home. She ran off with my Cadillac.
And even though the three little pigs wish the big bad wolf would blow down our broadcast tower whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Can hardly wait.
Well, you're going to like this. This comes from the Never Give Up Hope department.
Oh.
You know, I have a bunch of folders with potentially usable Puzzlers, Stinko Puzzlers, and I keep shuffling them together.
Trying to make something worthwhile.
And I frequently look at folders that I haven't looked at in a while. And I happened to pick up this puzzle the other day from a guy named Barry Lorber. And I looked at the date, July 96. So if you sent in a puzzler,
yeah,
we may use yours.
I hope he's still alive.
I hope so, too. And here's the puzzle. It's pretty simple in its statement. The solution may not be.
Is it one
so
of
simple.
The series like World War II, string, matchstick?
Well, it may initiate a series.
Ah, go ahead.
You're given $100 and told to spend it all purchasing exactly 100 animals at the pet store. Dogs cost $15. Cats cost $1. And mice are 25 cents each. So you got to spend $100.
You have to spend exactly $100 and you end up with exactly 100 animals.
And the only other criterion is that you have to purchase at least one of each animal.
Oh, and you can't leave a tip.
Tipping is not allowed. No, it's like Dunkin' Donuts. No tipping.
So if you end up with $4, you can't.
Now, you want mice? No, I don't know. I got plenty of mice. Now, as you might expect, you have to buy the mice in multiples of four.
Yeah, I figured that out right away.
I know you're quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, how many of each animal do you have to purchase to equal 100 animals purchased at exactly $100? And this is good for the kids who have been on, Christmas break.
Yeah. I see immediately that this is a simple algebraic problem with three unknowns and two equations.
I think so.
I see them already.
If you think you know the
and I'm stuck already.
If you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of an Arcade Legends full-size 300-pound gaming system with upright gaming console, Wells Gardner 25-inch monitor, 3-inch trackball, 2 joysticks, and 35 preloaded vintage arcade games, including Asteroid, Centipede, and Missile Command. Berman must be building a game room and ship it overnight, please, to Puzzle It Tower.
Overnight, even.
Puzzle It Tower, Car Talk Plaza. They must be putting the finished coat of paint on. Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a question and you can't wait, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hold your water. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, who's there?
Hi, this is Carol from Cincinnati.
Hi. Oh, Carol from Cincinnati. Wait a minute now. The big question, is there an E at the end? Don't tell me. I would say Cincinnati. I would have to say there is no
E. You're branching out now. You weren't happy with the C and K and Catherine.
No, I don't think there's an E at the end of the Carol.
You are correct.
Okay.
Oh, God. He's swelling his head.
There you go.
But it is K-A-R-O-L.
It is not.
It's
K-A-R-Y-L.
No. The regular
All right,
way.
What's up, Carol?
Well, I have an 88 Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely running car runs forever, 107,000 miles now. It's doing very well, except since the summer, it has developed a very bad behavior.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
What I'm finding is that when I drive it and then put it in park and stop and get out, I come back, I try to start the car, it won't start in park. I put it in neutral, voila, I'm fine.
Cool.
Well, then drive it around, put it in park, leave, come back, start it up right in park. It's fine. So how
Great.
Come it's not starting in park all the time?
Yeah, this is so good. This
but
is
it, but
so
it
good.
Never fails to start in neutral.
Yeah.
You haven't taken it to anybody yet because this is so simple that even even Krusty would know the
Actually,
answer to this.
Actually, I did, and he shook his head and he scratched his head and he said, why don't you call Car Talk?
Was I mean?
Yeah, would you take it?
Was that your dentist who told you that?
No, it's actually a good mechanic, but.
Well, I've gotten the feeling lately that a lot of mechanics are taking the easy way out and not bothering to diagnose things and just asking people to call us. We're sick of it.
Well.
Yeah, I mean the burden is unwieldy here. It's difficult.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't offer some kind of a theory at least. And the theory is that the neutral safety switch is faulty.
Mm-hmm.
And the neutral safety switch has two positions on it that allow starting. And the one for park is probably worn out or the shifter is misadjusted. You might try the following experiment next time. When it won't start in park, turn the key to the crank position as if you were going to start it. You may have to do this with your hands crossed. So with your right hand, turn the key. And with your left hand, reach either under or over that other arm. And jiggle the shifter, or try to push it more into park, or try to take it slightly out, and I bet you'll find a spot where it'll crank and fire up. And that will tell you that the neutral safety switch is worn out and needs to be replaced.
Okay.
So you need a new one. I don't know what it costs. I'll be honest, I've never replaced one on a Honda. I don't think they ever go bad.
Yeah.
But they must go bad once in a while, and I think you need one.
Yeah.
And if you don't fix it, it won't be the end of the world.
Well,
until it stops starting in neutral.
Exactly. Then you fix it.
Yeah, and when it stops starting in neutral, I'm in a lot of trouble then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kevin from Gardena, California.
Hey, Kevin. What's going on?
Well, I have a wonderful old 62 T-Bird that I've had for about, I don't know, probably 7 years or so. But something that's happened ever since I got it, whenever I drive it for probably more than 45 minutes or so, I get sleepy.
You get sleepy.
I get sleepy.
How old are you? Because the same thing happens to me.
I turned 40, but that's unrelated.
You turned 40.
That might be it.
What, this is not a convertible?
No, unfortunately. I can't afford one of those.
Oh, man. Too bad.
Well, it may be that just the nature of this car is inducing some kind of euphoric state.
It's unlikely, though.
Either that or you're suffering from carbon monoxide poisoning.
That's occurred to me. That's what I'm most concerned about.
I mean, it's an easy test, but you can't do it.
Yeah, go to the pet store, buy a parakeet. Don't name them because you won't have them long.
No, I mean, if you go to a hospital or a clinic somewhere, they will do a test, and they'll know.
Oh, you don't want the test. You don't want the test. The test is a blood gases test, and they have to take arterial blood.
Oh.
I had that once because my doctor thought I had carbon monoxide poisoning. He found out I was just stupid. But it took him a long time to reach that conclusion. But the test was rather painful. But you can buy...
You can get a carbon monoxide tester.
Right. That one doesn't test your blood, but tests for the presence of CO
in the car.
Okay.
And it's a little thing that changes color just before you black out. You know, but you should do that. And as a matter of fact, anyone that has an old jalopy, and I'm guessing you have an exhaust leak under the hood someplace...
Okay. And it's getting into the car.
One of the manifolds is probably leaking exhaust, and it's getting sucked up in that through the cowl where the ventilation system sucks its air in. Mm-hmm. And you could take it to a shop and have them test the system for leaks. It's pretty easy to test. You plug up the tailpipe, in this case, I think this thing has two tailpipes.
Yep.
And plug them up, and when you do that, the engine should stall. If it doesn't, you've got a leak.
Okay.
And get it fixed up and go up to the mountains for a while and breathe some fresh air and see if you can get all that CO out of your system. Good luck. It took me a long time. Oh, no. I was stupid. That's taking even longer.
Can't be fixed.
See you,
but
Kevin.
You really shouldn't drive it much until you get this fixed.
Will do. Thanks,
good luck.
Guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to lose another listener.
I know. We can't afford. Kevin, get this thing, get it right away, man. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Laura. I'm from Rockville, Maryland.
Lauren?
Laura.
Laura.
Yes.
Da, 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 da. Rockville, Maryland.
Yes, and I have a 72 Volkswagen Super Beetle.
Come on.
I do.
Wow.
Yes, and I'm having a little bit of trouble. It's got an auto stick transmission, which apparently was some debacle that they did for a few years.
Wasn't that a stupid thing?
Yeah, when these cars were popular, and we used to work on them a lot.
Yes.
We knew all the customers that had these auto shifts, and there was always a mad rush for the bathroom when one of you came in.
I know. It's horrible.
We should explain to people who don't know what this is that it's a stick shift with no clutch.
Right.
Right. So in order to disengage the clutch, there is a switch that is located at the base of the shifter so that when the driver touches the shifter and pushes even the slightest bit downward, it electronically disengages the clutch. You make your shift into whatever gear you want, first, second, third, fourth, reverse. And then when you release it, the electric clutch
reengages
much like your foot clutch would engage. But without your having to know how to drive a stick shift car.
Someone's crazy idea.
Someone's crazy. And it wasn't just VW that had this. Electric clutches were popular for a few days.
Yeah.
Well, a friend and I had put a new engine in the car. We actually got a rebuilt auto stick transmission just because it was easier and cheaper than changing it to a standard.
Right.
Everything's working fine now except reverse.
Oh.
And when I put the car in reverse, 99 times out of 100, it makes the most horrible noise you've ever heard. And sometimes it's like a medium horrible noise, like it just goes clunk, and it clunks in. And sometimes it's like metal grinding horrible.
And it is metal grinding horrible.
Yeah, it's called gears.
Yes. And it's not only I worry about my transmission, it's that the car is so cute, and people always say, oh, what a cute car. And then I make this horrible noise, and they're just totally unimpressed. So it's painful for me, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like wearing a tuxedo with the seat of the pants split open.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're familiar with it.
So what are your long-range goals for this car?
I just want it to be a daily driver.
Why?
But
sure.
I just want to know if this is just something I have to live with.
Well, is there any is there any difficulty getting into first?
No.
None whatsoever?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Would you like to reconsider?
Well, I mean, maybe I've just gotten used to it, and so difficulty is too strong a word.
No, I mean, when you touch that shift lever and push it into first,
mm-hmm.
it goes in just as smooth as silk?
It doesn't always go in as smooth as silk, but...
And when it doesn't, what does it do?
It just kind of, it feels like it catches a little bit, but it never makes a noise.
Yeah.
Well, here are the two possibilities.
Okay.
And I don't even know, I assume there's some kind of an adjustment on this electric clutch.
Yeah.
So it may be that it's not disengaging enough. And when a clutch doesn't disengage enough, the gear that's most difficult to get into is reverse.
Okay.
However, that being said, because of your unwillingness to admit that you're having trouble getting into first gear, I would have to suggest that maybe it isn't the clutch. Instead, it's the transmission. And that the reverse gear synchro is going.
Okay, it's a just freshly rebuilt transmission. Not that that means
that. Well, that lends credence to the theory that the synchro something was assembled incorrectly.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I would do one of the following things.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can diminish the ugly noise
mm-hmm.
by trying another gear first. Have you ever done that? In other words, instead of going into reverse straight off.
Okay.
grab the shifter and go into second or third or fourth and then into reverse.
Okay.
And see if sometimes you can slow the gears down enough so that you can eliminate or at least reduce the gnashing. And unless you have a warning.
Sometimes it doesn't do it, but it usually does. I mean, every now and then on a blue moon, it goes in with no noise.
I mean, you have to stop it from doing this.
Yeah, right. It is.
Because it's going to, what you hear really is gears really gnashing of teeth, as they say.
And the fact that every once in a blue moon, it is okay. Makes me think it's the transmission, it's the gears.
Oh, great.
Oh, bummer.
All righty.
But, I mean, you might want to ask somebody who's familiar. I'm sure you have a mechanic somewhere.
Well, the problem is I have a Volkswagen shop that I go to, and they're so prejudiced against the auto stick. They're like, well, you know.
Yeah, as everybody is.
You should bake something. We mechanics are partial. We tell you what we like. We like a carrot cake. We like banana bread. We like brownies.
What's good enough to overcome the pain of working on an auto stick?
Maybe all three in this case. Yeah. So fire up the oven and good luck.
All right. Thank you.
See you, Laura. Bye-bye.
Bye. I never knew if there was a way to adjust that clip, that thing.
I was always hiding in the bathroom.
Maybe nobody knows.
We always had Nigel do it. Well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy, Frogman Berman. Mm. Boy, well, a lot of adventures he's been in, huh?
That we can talk about.
All right. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Chris Cuff and Emily Mackey. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Calumet Alouette Stale Baguette Vinaigrette Crepe Suzette and Tagamet Food Fet, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Otake Oshawa. Our child care provider is A. Hugh Nokatoff. Our gambling addiction counselor is Althea Andrasia. Our rock and roll historian is Bruce Wade Hughes. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz. Our Russian chauffeur is Pekov and Dropoff. And our staff tailor is you, Jazz. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey, known to the shivering songbirds in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks. Thanks so much for listening.
You liked her, didn't you?
We're Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers. And remember, don't drive like my brother.
And remember, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Harassment. You can get a podcast of this show, Swashbuckle, through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, you can check out the list of every employee who has ever worked at Car Talk Plaza.
Now, you want to guess how many names are on that list?
You mean like our chauffeur, Pico Fedropoff, and our marriage counselor, Marion Haste, all those people?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50, I don't know.
Close. 605.
I smell a pension scam here.
Anyway, browse through the entire Car Talk staff list, from our mother-in-law liaison, Stella Payne Diaz, to our Jamaican document security specialist, Euripides Upman, all this week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even those single-celled organisms complain that we give evolution a bad name whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.